Welcome to Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast. This is the second episode in our London Design Festival special series. Yesterday, we published a chat with Simone Brewster, creator of Spirit of Place, and Aurélie Fontaine of Osmo Studio, who are staging Mycelium Unearthed at the festival. In this episode, we visit the Brompton Design District, catching up with the curator of the area, Jane Withers, and discussing this year's theme, Conviviality, the Art of Living Together. You'll also hear from designer Ryo Kobayashi and design duo Peter Palotto and Christopher DeVos. So let's head into Cromwell Place, one of the landmark destinations of Brompton Design District, just by South Kensington Tube, and we'll catch up with Jane Withers. So we're here in the Brompton Design District, and we've started at Cromwell Place, where we're catching up with Jane Withers, who has curated this. Thank you for meeting us, Jane.
Oh, well, thanks very much for coming along. It's great to have you here. And it's always really exciting to see the things, the last touches and things getting going and the sticking plaster being removed.
Yes, because you're about to welcome all the press. So before they all descend, the theme this year is conviviality. Tell me why you came up with that theme.
Well, it's conviviality, the art of living together. And conviviality, its root is convivere, to live together. And I just was rereading Ivan Illich's book, Tools for Conviviality. And he talks about, I think it's from 1973, but it's so fresh and relevant. And he talks about ideas like the new politics will come out of friendship, or how we can design the world with tools that shape social justice, equality. And it seemed to me that the simplicity, and it's also one of his books that's written for what he would call then the common man, but for ways to for everyone to participate. And it just seems a very relevant, topical message today. And I think we're interested too. You know, Brompton is always about bringing people together, giving them spaces and seeing what has happened. It's sort of light touch with a kind of, you know, curation with a light touch. But I suppose we're, you know, it's a subject that you can approach whether you're talking about a dining table and conviviality, often the way we think about it, you know, coming together around a meal. But also, what does it mean for social design? How do you interact with people differently? Or how do you think about craftsmen and conviviality? How does it sort of influence practices and processes? So there's so many different levels you can sort of approach it from, I think.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the highlights? I love the sound of all in awe. We talk about awe quite a lot at WGSN as something that gives collective effervescence and brings people together, and that sense of community when you feel a sense of community and awe. And I just love the sound of that title. What's that piece about?
Well, All in Aura are, I guess, a collective, a group of designers who offer their services to charities, organisations that might not normally have access or even think about design services in that way. We wanted to do something outdoor on the streets, but something that, again, brought different voices that you might not normally find in South Kensington. You know, it's quite a, or even in the design festival, actually. So there, the piece is actually called All Together, and they started in research into the borough, the Royal Borough of Kensington and Chelsea. And, you know, ever since Grenfell and before, we've known it's a tale of, you know, many different stories, different parts of the borough, North Kensington, South Kensington, have very, very different demographics. And so we wanted to look a bit further into the area, and their research led them to the fact that Kensington Chelsea has the, I think it's the highest number of single households in the country, but across all demographics. And then they collaborated with the Kensington Chelsea Foundation and I think Mind, and they found that they're really looking at loneliness in the borough because it's a prominent issue, a kind of taboo. You don't see it and you don't know where you might find it or who might be, you know, it doesn't as well announce itself. So they did some workshops with the local community groups through the charities and tried to visualize loneliness. And they've come up with a series of flags, and it's outdoors in Edgerton Gardens, and they're both looking at sort of loneliness and the opposite, togetherness. They ask people, and there are other stunning graphics, but I think, you know, flags illustrate, you know, or flags are put up for so many different reasons in the city, but probably maybe never before, to show its mental health. So the idea was just to sort of visualize something different on the street, see what happens, and they're holding workshops and so on.
And over the years that you've curated here, are you feeling a huge shift? I mean, I feel like I see it in a move to accessibility, inclusive design, addressing mental health issues. Is that something that you're seeing and that you've been very conscious of and you've tried to represent that in your curation?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in the last, you know, few years, it's maybe 5, 6, it's grown and we need it now. And, you know, it's such a great opportunity for design is no longer about products. It's about ideas, shaping society, thinking about things. And I'm, you know, particularly with emerging designers, younger generations, and there's so much for it to do. We don't need more tables or chairs, but we need so many other things resolved. So I think two areas is one is inclusivity and social design, and the other probably is systemic thinking and materials and how we deal with environmental issues that we try to focus on here and in other things we do.
What are you excited about seeing this year? I know you're very busy, you've been busy doing this, but is there something you've heard of or that you want to go and experience or see?
Yeah, I mean, I am very curious about the Design Festival project in St Paul's because it's such a spectacular space and it's the 300th anniversary of Wren. But how do you add something to that and what exactly will it be and how will it make people think about the architecture? And, you know, we still need spaces for reflection and contemplation. So that's what I'm going to do Sunday evening. I'll be going along to Evensong.
Thanks for that top tip, Jane. So that sounds like a great place to check out. Thank you for your time. Now we're going to go off and explore some of the exhibitions here at Cromwell Place and Brompton Design District.
Thank you very much.
So the first space we've entered at Cromwell Place is the Arc Gallery, which is the first solo show of Ryo Kobayashi. And it's a room full of, there's furniture, there's some really beautifully suspended lights. There's a great piece I can see on the wall, which is sort of like a marquetry. It looks animated, it looks like a creature, but it's got sort of legs. It's like a table with some sort of apertures like eyes, and that's hanging up. And then at one end, there's a DJ table with these very colourful speakers that are in sort of wood and marquetry and very bright with very strong geometric patterns on them. And then there's a lovely lounge bit in the middle and various other pieces, but there's a lot going on here. So Ryo, tell me, this is your first solo show.
So it's called actually Manus Manum Lavat, which means one hand washes the other. It's a Latin way of saying one hand of that. And then I have a friend in Austria, like he's a half Japanese guy. And then like we used to hang out, like one of the, we were best friends. And then when we were really young, you know, you do something kind of a little bit like cheeky stuff, you know, every now and then. And then we did it always together, like jumping to this. Yeah. So we always said, or like he always said, Manus Manum Lavat, which is like doing something like cheeky together to accomplish, to get something to the. And I really liked this idea. And then I didn't know what was, you know, like it was very academic and then everything. So I was like, ah, oh, this is kind of like quite interesting way of saying collaboration and also like cheeky and fun. And since then, I've always used this kind of like Manus Manum Lavat as the collaborations.
So it's very generous of you. It's your solo show, but you've actually invited to share the space with a lot of your like friends and peers. Yeah. So your pieces in here, I can see lots of colour, lots of pattern. You have very distinctive work, which is colourful, but also mixes with wood. And I know that you've got a DJ set up here at one end of the room. So it's I know the theme for the whole of the Brompton Cross area is conviviality. So I guess music's pretty important to you.
Yes, the music is very important for my life as well. And also like to be creative or to be free. So I also like set up this kind of music, like the setup for the music. And I produced this piece with an Austrian speaker manufacturer or like hi-fi manufacturer called Wiener Lautsprecher Manufaktur. Like music was so important. So I really wanted to do something with music in my life. So the furthest thing I could do, that I could imagine as a designer, is just designing the speaker. And then
here they are.
So here they are. I did two different designs for speakers, and then I also designed one amplifier, which goes together, which has a shape of factories, and then it's processed into the to the speakers and then make amazing hi-fi sound.
Yeah, that's really cool. The top of the stack for the music system, as you say, it looks like the roof of a factory.
Exactly. So it's kind of like shows this layering, like it's the music is kind of like a layered with like instruments and like rhythms and then sounds. So I wanted to play with the idea by using the marquetry work with wood, different type of woods. And then I put like another color, layer of the color, which goes on top of each other and then like create, like shows and also feels this kind of layering.
What is it you love about marquetry? Because you use it quite a lot in your work. Why do you like it?
So I really like it because I do woodwork. Like my background is woodwork, and then marquetry requires super, like very, very fine skill to make it really precise. And but you can also like play with the patterns and then like, you know, it's like so much work, but in same time, it's like very, very satisfying as well, like to look at it. And like, so I kind of like, that was kind of like the idea, really, like, because I personally feel like I have to do something that I could do, not from someone else. So I was trying to find what is kind of like me. And then I feel like now I found kind of like background of woodwork and then passion of color. So I just try to do it more exciting than, I don't know, most of the design. I cannot say that, but...
This piece up here is really fun, and it kind of feels really animated, even though it's actually a bit of furniture on the wall. You said it's called the Bat, and that's kind of using old furniture and recreating it into something new, right?
Yeah. This is the third piece of this kind of series. I started on it during the pandemic with this chair.
Oh, I love this chair. So hang on, this chair, let's describe it a bit. So it's got like, it's a wicker seat, but you've threaded lots of other coloured threads within it. It's got like three colours. And then the top back of the seat has got kind of, it looks like it's made from a brush. It's got brush hairs.
Yeah.
And it's, again, feels animated. Like it's like, is this, are these eyes and is this a mouth?
Can be.
And look at this underneath. It's like there's curling bits of wood.
Yeah, this like warms like the whole.
So what was your thinking? Did you sketch this first?
Or no,
did you
no,
just
no,
work
no.
on it?
I got the piece, which was broken, like the leg was broken. And then my friend, who is an artist, is Peter McDonald. He asked me like, if you would like to repair this chair in your creative way, you can like play around, you know, like everything is possible. Just have it and, you know.
See what you do with
see
it.
See what can do. So it was very like, I got like a bit of pressure and also like, you know, he gave me lots of trust. So basically like I didn't need to care about like the chair, like, as long as it stands and then we can use it. So he was very established an artist. He's a very established artist. So I wanted to like do something that I can like, you know,
impress
keep
him.
Up, you know, impress him. So I tried to use a bit of color, and then like it was a pandemic time, so I kind of like made more everything like coming out a bit and like kind of like aging, which is kind of grows hair. And so, and then I named it as a positive chair. Positive is like more like it's positive feeling, but at the time was also like positive was negative, so I was just like playing with this name as well.
So you really had time to explore. Was he impressed? How did he respond to the chair?
So that was, he was very impressed. All family was very impressed. And then I was very happy when I gave it to them. And then they were like, you know, wow. And then they were very social. And then they invite lots of people to dinners. And then like people sees it. And then like I get another response from the other friends. And it was very like it makes keeps me making happy all the time. Every time I hear something about this chair.
Yeah. So that led to you playing with more old bits of furniture.
So the second project was like also from the Brompton Design District last year. I made this, I was part of the Victoria and Albert Museum show. It's called R for Repair.
Yes, from Singapore. That
exactly.
Was fantastic.
Hans Tan and then Jane Withers did a collaboration or curated a show together. And that time I got this broken 18th century like sewing box, which stands on one leg with like four like things coming out. And then I opened up the box and then made a table out of it. It was also like very exciting because the owner of the object didn't see until it was exhibition was started. So it was only the conversation, but also the first conversation that we had was amazing because we had a video call and she said, "Rio, I really like your work. Do whatever you want." And I also like even said, "Okay, I'm gonna make carpet out of it so that make my possibility open."
And then it was a complete surprise.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Do you think that your heritage, Japanese heritage, they have a very strong tradition of repair and with kintsugi and all these sorts of things? Yeah. Do you feel that's a natural, almost why you've been drawn to that? Do you see a sort of...
I don't know. Because my heritage is like super mixed. It's my father is Japanese, but my mother is Austrian, a bit partly Italian. I grew up in the countryside. They live in the countryside in Japan. And it's also like we had lots of like visitors from all over the world because we were international and my parents traveled a lot when they were younger. So
you didn't necessarily feel the tradition of repair at home?
And like repairing, I felt like all these pieces that I did was repaired to bring people joy rather than like other objects. So it's kind of a bit different, but in a way that the repairing itself is also like, kind of like you giving a new purpose to like something that it wasn't really, like appreciated anymore. Yeah. So I feel like really happy about being part of it.
Well, thank you so much for showing us and bringing London a bit of joy.
I'll try to bring more joy in the future as well.
Okay, we've just stepped into Gallery 7 and I kind of feel like I've walked into another dimension. It's full of colour. There are rugs on the walls that look like kind of maps, topographic kind of patterns. There's a little bit of a feel of malachite, but in every lovely warm corals, limes, the palette is just delicious. And this is the work of a fantastic duo, one who used to work in fashion. Nice to meet you.
I'm Christopher DeVos Caballero.
I'm Peter Pilato.
And interestingly, this is on the site of a room that you created in 2017, which was equally colourful. But this now feels very much like it's solely your work, whereas before you showed with your work, but a big collection of your friends like Beth and Laura Wood. So tell me about this collection. It's really impactful and colourful.
Yeah, so Christopher and I obviously have always been fascinated in interiors. And so now the relaunch of our second phase of the collaboration, we wanted to explore our skills of textiles and surfaces that we've been working on with our ready-to-wear collections and apply that to the home. A project that has, in our opinion, a bigger longevity that suits our creativity better, we thought, than just doing the collections. And it's exciting because there is also a collection to go with it. So there's the home and ready-to-wear, meaning a genderless kind of collection that we are also presenting.
And which you are wearing.
Yeah, we're also wearing it.
And tell me, some of the pieces, I believe, of the clothes are on the wall here.
It's really a mix. I think we always did knitwear. So the idea was to do like some knitted blankets that, you know, you would throw yourself on yourself or on your sofa, on your couch. So we created this combination of yarns together that have been translated into blankets for the home, but also into pieces that you can wear at home or outside, you know, like more loungy or more casual pieces that are genderless pieces, basically. So yeah, everything has been translated with a pattern that we loved, which is the malachite pattern, which is a stone that also has been used a lot in the furniture world since the 1920s or for Nassetti. And it's always used in its more classical colors, which is this green and black combination. So we took on this malachite pattern and then wanted to translate it into different aspects, different textiles, because this is majorly, it is a textile project per se, into woven fabrics for upholstery, into carpets, into throws, into cushions, many things, yeah.
And were all the pieces in this room, were they made at various places around the world? Like I presume the rugs were perhaps made in Nepal or?
Yeah, but I mean, the starting point of this collaboration actually was the lacquered furniture, which was made in the UK, more precisely in Epsom. And it's again, back to the furniture and the beginning of that malachite pattern, how it's used in the furnishing world, we found this workshop, this incredible workshop that does all lacquered furniture, and they could recreate the malachite pattern. It's hand painted, so hand brushed actually. It's some kind of comb that they use to paint the malachite pattern, and from there we've created all the different textiles around it.
Will these be sort of one-off pieces, like editions of 12 or...?
Yeah, case to case. Obviously, they're all editions. I mean, on the other hand, also, they're all custom-made. So the rugs are made to order, and then depending on the size or project, they can be custom translated for each respective space. Same for the upholstery fabrics, that we try to see the best engineering for each sofa and so on. So there's two different patterns that we developed. And the other things as well. I mean, the embroidered velvet that we're using for both cushions, but also the screen, the room divider, that again can come in different sizes and so on. So it's exciting to be doing this kind of custom project, but for the house, something we did for the ready-to-wear to an extent, but now applying it to spaces and collaborating with interior designers is very exciting to us.
Yeah, I think the idea also behind this whole project is how to have more longevity in the textile world. I think we were a little bit fed up with creating everything for not even a season. So I think what enticed us to go into more of the home world is also the question of how many times you actually change the fabric of your sofa. You know, maybe it's for a lifetime. So I think it's so great to do things that have a longevity and that live with you and that you can surround yourself with for a long time, you know, in contrast to the fast pace of fashion. Yeah.
So obviously you're not missing fashion because you're still managing to incorporate it. Tell me a little bit about the clothing that will connect to this range.
So the clothing range is directly inspired from the same idea as the textiles for the interiors. And we did printed silks and shakar knits for the knitwear. And yeah, it was this idea of the pieces being genderless and therefore inclusive. And also, it's so funny, having Christopher and I having run the brand for 14 years, we were never able though to wear the pieces because we did only women's wear. I mean, not only in the sense that we could never, ourselves fully experience it. So that's obviously such a good thing as well, that as a designer you really get to feel what you create and understand it better therefore, and also design accordingly, like feel exactly what would you wear, what not, what color makes most sense with this or that. So
it was also part of the whole thing that we wanted to wear the clothes, so we were designing around what we could wear or not, or who would wear it, or like in different ways, in many ways. But
I think it's interesting. It's something that gender inclusive clothing is something that we talk about a lot at WGSN, and kind of moving to that place where everything is like that. I always think there's challenges with like different body shapes and sizes, but how did you address that in the collection?
Well, you know, I think our previous brand was it was more like a body hugging figure, like it was more like body conscious and kind of and I think the idea here, it was to create like around the home collection a collection that you can actually wear at home and that feels more relaxed. It's more like the pieces are more based around a pajama or a robe or, you know, like a slouchy jumper or pieces that are more casual per se. So therefore the shapes are also more forgiving, I guess. So more relaxed. So the whole idea is of a more relaxed vibe with this new venture. And I think there's a bit conversation about, you know, all of this, but I think things are evolving in the right way and we're happy to be part of that.
For sure. Thank you so much for letting us have a little preview and good luck with the week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's it for episode 2 of our London Design Festival special series. Thank you to all our guests and thank you for tuning in. There are so many more installations and events in Brompton Design District to explore. I also recommend Fell Studios at the Farm Shop in particular. It's a collaborative effort orchestrated by Marco Campardo, Guan Li and Luca Lopinto. And that shows the work of 18 designers, architects and artists who were in residence this summer at Grimsdyke Farm in Buckinghamshire. And it's a great example of innovative, local and sustainable design. And that's on at 209 Brompton Road. Tomorrow, we'll be dropping our third in this series. So listen out for that. And we'll be visiting Material Matters. If you're a subscriber, there's plenty more information on design on our interiors platform, where we scour the globe for the latest trends and innovations. And if you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to wgsn.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries. And these include food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. You can subscribe to the show on all major podcast platforms. And if you like what you've heard, why not leave us a rating and review? And if you're interested to hear more from us, do check out The Lives of Tomorrow, which is hosted by our CEO, Carly Buzashi. And you can find that on all podcast platforms. So listen out for our next London Design Festival special. And thanks for listening.